Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses that are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. They allow principles to take precedence over ad hocism. For them, profitability is as important as scale, creating and leading new categories and innovations. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies, ecstasies, and frustrations and little joys, of course. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial and investment journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Arvind Agarwal, CEO and founder, C4D Partners. Incepted in 2017, Capital for Development, C4D Partners, is a leading impact investment fund manager with a focus on early stage ventures in emerging markets. Headquartered in the Netherlands, C4D Partners works across geographies and sectors to solve the often unheeded social and environmental challenges and generate better livelihood opportunities for undeserved communities. With two decades of experience in PE and VC investing, Arvind is a seasoned alternative investment professional focusing on social impact investing. As the CEO at C4D Partners, he heads the global operation of the C4D Asia Fund and takes pride in supporting and building organizations that make a positive difference to society and simultaneously create wealth for the stakeholders. Arvind also serves as a director and advisor for 9 portfolio companies, wherein he provides strategic guidance to the companies. Before joining C4D Partners, Arvind worked with organizations like Abu Dhabi Capital Management, Goldman Sachs, and eValueServe India Private Limited. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Arvind.
Thank you, Gaurav. Delighted to be here.
Arvind, let me start off with a very basic question for my own understanding and the benefit of our listeners. What is impact investing? Importantly, what is not impact investing, Arvind?
That's a very interesting question, Gaurav. I think the good and the bad part of the sector is that impact investing can be defined as per your organization's goal, right? There is no one definition to impact investing, because as an impact investor, I could focus on gender inclusion, I could focus on financial inclusion, I could focus on disability inclusion, I could focus on climate. And that's where the problem lies as well, because there is no one definition of impact investing. We see often that everything and anything is brushed as impact investing. And that's a big problem which we need to solve today. With respect to what is not impact investing, I think wherever the focus is only and only financial return is not impact investing. I don't even call it investing. Forget about impact investing. Gaurav.
All right. Thanks, Arvind. But how is it different from private equity and venture capital investment, Arvind?
Yes. So, this is the thesis which we are trying to prove at C4D Partners. I believe that impact investing has to be substantially different from a VC or a PE investing. What we have tried to execute at C4D is that we are investing at the intersection of a private equity and a venture capital. Unfortunately, today, impact funds are either operated as a VC or a PE. So when I say at the intersection of PE and VC, what we mean here is that we have to do early stage investing in India. And at the same time, the underwriting or the way we look at the investment with respect to holding period, type of returns, it has to be more like private equity. what has gone wrong is that in impact investing, we have put in capital in SMEs with the lens of a venture investing, where we want growth at any cost. And that should not be the premise of impact investing. It should not be either a PE or a VC. It should be at the intersection of a PE and VC. And that's what we have successfully proven through our first fund, which is a C4D Asia fund.
You know, tell me a bit about the landscape of impact investing in India. Impact investing seems to be creating the right noises in India. But that said, how does impact investing in pure technical sense, Arvind?
It's unfortunately not. And as I said earlier, you know, there's no one definition for impact investing. So today we see that there are a lot of confusion with respect to what is impact investing, what is VC, and what is PE. And because of that, if I were to give you data with respect to, you know, how much of capital in a year has been invested in private equity or impact investing, the line is not there. And the data which you will see, it will be a summation of all these three strategies. And which is where, you know, technically, it's very difficult to say that impact investing has worked or not. Gaurav?
You know, the investment strategies of C4D are ingrained in the belief that fair economic development must enable economic inclusion, development of communities, and most importantly, improvement of people's perspectives in those communities. Help me understand this. What does this entail? And how does this work?
Sure. So, Gaurav, what happens is when you look at investing, particularly VC investing, it's about how fast the businesses can grow. And when we are talking about exponential growth, there has to be, you know, some sort of number of customers or the people whom you are serving has to be concentrated. And which is why you see most of the businesses are urban oriented. Now, what we at C4D have started doing is we understand that to diminish the economic gap which is there, we have to look at rural India. So most of our businesses are either focused towards rural India or it's focused towards marginalized communities in urban. Now, the flip side of this strategy is it'll take more time for the business to grow because you are not talking about a large customer base, which is concentrated in a few cities. So you have to be more patient, and which is where if you see impact investing was touted as patient capital. Unfortunately, the patience in patient capital has been missing.
Right. And, you know, so far as C4D is concerned, and you have recently said that you back companies where tech is an enabler and not the hero. That's a very interesting way of putting in words the basic philosophy of C4D partners so far as India is concerned or worldwide is concerned. But the question is, typically, who's the hero of your investments? If technology is not the hero, who's the hero of your investments? The idea, the founders, the promise of change? And if technology is not the hero of the investment, isn't that a limiting factor, Arvind?
It's an interesting question, and I've been quite vocal about the way technology has been sold to everybody with respect to investing. So when we say tech is not the hero, I'm old school, Gaurav. When you look at the traditional VC investing strategy, you know, it is usually where there is a tech product, and initially in the couple of years, when the product development is going on, a lot of money flows into R&D or getting the product market ready, and which is where the VC players come into play. Now, unfortunately, of late, what we have started seeing, that a lot of VC money is going into OPEX losses. Now, that's where the problem is, and which is why when we say that in our businesses, tech is not the hero, it's an enabler. Most of the tech companies you will see today, tech is playing an enabler role. It's not, tech is not a product, but the technology innovation is helping the business to have wider reach, and which is what we mean. Now, your question, if tech is not the hero, then who is? For us, it is the societal problem. Because when we look at a societal problem and try to find solution through sustainable businesses, it does fulfill two objectives. One, it is solving the societal problem. Two, because you have a business which is solving the societal problem, at the same time, it is also solving one or two pain points for the sector. And that makes a huge difference in the long run, where you are helping the world become a better place, and you're also helping the sectors or industry become more efficient.
So Arvind, you know, help me understand some of the portfolio investments that you have done. And it runs from rural areas to agriculture to rural industries. So how do you go about selecting your investee companies? What is that one defining variable that you look for when you're selecting an investee company and deciding to cut out a check for them? Arvind?
So there are two factors, Gaurav, that we look at selecting our businesses. And maybe I'll give two quick examples, one urban and one rural. So we have an investment in a company which is into last mile, and they are operating in urban India. So most of their clientele are e-commerce players. Now, this company hires people with disability for the last mile delivery. Most of their delivery persons are people who are deaf and mute. Now, this is a societal problem where people with disability don't get opportunities for a livelihood in corporate. So this company is solving that problem by hiring people who are deaf and mute in their businesses. But at the same time, when you look at last mile delivery as a sector, the sector is quite cutthroat. It has grown exponentially in the last couple of years. And because the growth has been so exponential, a lot of poaching happens from each players in the sector, which has led to high attrition. And that has also led to high human resource cost, because you need to scale up very fast and you poach from your competition, give them higher salaries with respect to per deliveries they make. Now, this company where we are invested in, they don't hire people on per package delivery. It's a full-time job. Now, here what happens is attrition in this company is almost zero, because the employees are not poached by the competition, because it's very difficult for the competition to put these people in their processes. And this, in turn, what does is, if you look at the unit economics of this company, if a last mile delivery center becomes profitable at 1,000 deliveries per center, this particular company becomes profitable at 650 deliveries per center. So it makes business sense, and at the same time, you are solving a societal problem.
And what would be a typical check size? Because you were an early stage investor.
Yes. So we start with $500,000, and first check would be up to $2 million. We follow on, because we are typically a pre-Series A investor, and we follow on with Series A and Series B, and we can go up to $6 to $7 million in one portfolio company.
And you also don't invest, as a matter of policy and also an investment philosophy, probably, you do not invest in companies where there are already too many VC investors in play. What is the reason for going down this path? You don't want to be seen with too many VCs, or is it that you want to be a single largest investor when the company is beginning to grow?
So you're right. We are usually the first institutional check writer when we invest in a company. And gradually, and as you rightly said, we don't come into companies where there are already too many VCs in the play, primarily because of the financial discipline, because VCs operate differently than how an impact fund operates or should operate. Our focus is a balance between growth and profitability. For a VC, it is growth at any cost. And that's something not our philosophy, and which is why we stay away from companies where there are already too many VCs in the play.
You know, C4D Partners, and through your existing fund, C4D Asia Fund, has invested more than 40% of its AUM, assets under management, in women-owned and women-led enterprises. Is the strategy the same for C4D's second fund, which is dedicated to India?
Yes, the strategy remains the same, where we will invest at least 30% of our AUM in women-owned led enterprises. And the thinking behind this strategy, Gaurav, is we believe an impact fund has to incentivize themselves with one or two KPIs on the impact which they are focusing. And, you know, this, we come back to the discussion which we had at the beginning, where you asked, what is impact investing? Since there is no one definition, as an impact fund, I could say, hey, our focus is gender inclusion. And if that is our focus, we have to walk the talk. How do we ensure that our incentives are linked to the impact goals which we are promising to the investors? And which is why we linked our carried interest, which is the performance bonus of the fund, to our impact goals, which will be the case for our second fund as well.
And do the fund managers within C4D have targets to set that an X percentage of your funds will have to be necessarily deployed in women-led enterprises? Are there internal targets set, Arvind?
Yes. The target is 30%. We have to invest at least 30%. If we are lower than 30%, then our carry percentage decreases. And if we are more than 30%, our carry percentage increases.
You know, you are also on the board as an advisor or as an advisor in many of your portfolio companies. To what extent do you actually get involved in the running of these businesses, Arvind?
We are quite hands-on, Gaurav. So our strategy, or the core part of our strategy, is that we take a board seat. And as I said, we are usually the first institutional check writer. We focus a lot with respect to ESG, with respect to processes, policies of the organization, the thinking, and how do they need to balance the growth and profitability. So we come in very hands-on from day one. And for the first 2 to 3 years, we remain that way as long as we don't see another institutional investor joining the company.
And how involved are you with the founders, and what is the kind of leeway you give them in running of the business? Because it's their business after all, and you are only the investors in the technical sense.
Yes, so we are more like a sparring partner, and we have a very clear philosophy here. As you rightly said, it's their businesses. So when we come on board, we share our opinion, what we feel about particular decision strategy, but we are always conscious, and we communicate this to the founders that end of the day, they have to take a decision. And once they have taken the decision, we'll stand by them. But as board members, as investors, our responsibility is to tell them about our opinion, even if that's conflicting than what they are thinking. Gaurav?
And typically, how long do you stay invested in your portfolio companies? Because you enter these companies at a very early stage. And, you know, I mean, one of your policies is that the company should be in operation for about 18 months or so, or at least 18 months or so, with not more than 250 employees and various other, you know, metrics that you look at before discussing any potential investment in these companies. How long do you stay invested in these companies typically?
So given the strategy, Gaurav, where we have a balance between the growth and the profitability, you know, our belief is that we need to stay invested for 6 to 7 years. Now, that's the minimum period for the value creation to kick in for the type of companies we focus on.
Eventually, you exit at around seventh year of the operations, or at the seventh year of your investment. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And how many exits have been made so far?
So we have a two-phase strategy towards exit, Gaurav, because we don't operate like a VC, and our mortality rate in the portfolio is quite low. So we have two type of companies in the portfolio. One, which will grow exponentially, and they are profitable, but they will raise capital for growth. And these are the one which will be bought, which will be bought over by a financial or a strategic investor. We very recently partially exited one of such transactions. Then the second part of the strategy is where the companies might not grow exponentially, but since our underwriting is more like a private equity, they are cash flow positive. In those scenarios, the founder usually buys us out, and the IRR in these cases will be lower. But at the same time, we are not losing capital, and we don't have to recoup this investment from the ones which are doing really well. So on the other side, we actually exited one company where the founder bought us out, and we are in discussion for another company where the founder is planning to buy us out. Gaurav.
Right. And you're also very hot in ESG, environmental, social, and governance investment. But I have a slightly different question, and it's on the broader landscape of ESG investing itself. You know, ESG investing is now quite literally very big business. But according to you, what explains the remarkable rise of ESG investing, and what does it mean for the future? I ask you this question because ESG measurement is an increasingly popular way of holding companies accountable when it comes to sustainability efforts and of giving companies an incentives to improve them. But the question is this: measurement, no matter how sophisticated it might be, is much better at capturing quantifiable inputs rather than complex and messy outcomes and impacts. And ESG is not necessarily everything in ESG is quantifiable. Do you think misinformation, and sometimes disinformation too, and a lack of globally accepted standardized practices and metrics are limiting impact ESG investing? Because fund managers are only chasing returns in the conventional sense, and so they are trying to tick the boxes so far as ESG part of the portfolio is concerned, and they're investing without actually going through standardized metrics, which should be the case, isn't it, Arvind?
So, there are a couple of points with respect to when we discuss ESG and impact investing or ESG as a whole. One, ESG is very different than impact investing. Impact investing is more forward-looking with respect to what impact you want to create, and ESG is more backward-looking with respect to how the company has been operating. Now, I hear your point with respect to there is no global standardized toolkit or a matrix on which companies can be ascertained with respect to their ESG score. However, I see life exists between 0 and 1. So it's a good start. Yes, there are a lot of greenwashing which might be happening with respect to just ticking the box when it comes to ESG. But the focus and everybody asking questions around ESG, gradually, things will catch up. And it will improve. Today, we might be closer to zero when we are looking at ESG compliant companies. We'll gradually get closer to one. It'll never be one, but I think it's a good development in the right direction.
Absolutely. And Arvind, final question. What next for C40 Partners in India? You have the India fund in place. And is there anything more being planned, or you will wait for this fund to get invested fully before raising a second fund?
We will wait for this fund to be up and running, not necessarily fully invested, before we start working on our next idea. But more than a subsequent fund, I think what C40 Partner is trying to work on is trying to fix the structural problem which exists with respect to impact funds in India. Today, impact funds are operating under the umbrella of VC funds, and they don't have a working structure of their own, which takes into account the different needs, different inputs of an impact fund. And I've been very vocal about it. And one of the things which I want to achieve in the next few years is get a right structure for an impact fund in India, so that the thin line which is there between a PE, VC, and impact fund doesn't harm the sector as a whole.
Thank you, Arvind, for these very deep insights and perspectives on impact investing, the landscape on ESG investing, and also the kind of work C40 Partners is doing, and in terms of its philosophy and policy of investing, particularly its focus on gender investing and women-led entrepreneurs and enterprises in India. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation.
Thank you, Gaurav.